One of the major pieces of evidence in the assassination of John F. Kennedy, an 8mm home movie taken by a local businessman named Abraham Zapruder. The Zapruder film was featured in Life magazine and became a focal point in the Warren Commission investigation. Does the Zapruder film we see today accurately represent the true events of November 22, 1963? Or has it been altered, as many researchers have suggested? In the following analysis, we shall attempt to find out. As you watch the film, you can see how the random motion of the camera makes analysis of the events difficult. Our first step is to remove as much of this extra motion as possible to focus solely on the movement of the limousine and the people in the scene. You can see that once the limousine is stabilized, it is easier to follow the movement of the people in the car and on the lawn. Previous researchers have stabilized the limousine as well to focus solely on the actions of Kennedy in the car. Now we're going to do something different. The first bystanders we see on the lawn seem to be looking not at the limousine which is passing them, but behind it, as if it has not reached them yet. This odd reaction would seem to support the idea that the background action is out of sync with the limousine. Let's take a look at the way separate layers could be combined in a 1963-era film using either an optical printer or an animation stand. Both use the same principle. The background bystanders on the lawn would need to be separated by masking out the limousine. This would leave a blank area in the foreground. In order to retime the background without this blank area showing, the background could be enlarged and reframed to create an overlap area. Then, the limousine layer, with the background masked out, could overlap this new background and be retimed and positioned independently, allowing its speed to be controlled as well. These layers joined together form what is called a composite. A jitter could then be applied to this composite to create the final effect. It has been argued by John Costella, Ph.D., that the Stemmons Freeway sign which passes in front of the limousine has been fabricated. His detailed analysis shows how the sign does not exhibit the same lens distortion or align in perspective with other objects in the scene. If the sign were a separate layer on top of the limousine, this would be the perfect way to cover the change between real and retimed footage. We also see Mary Mormon standing with her friend in the red coat, clearly on the lawn, when according to her testimony, she stepped forward onto the street when she took her picture as Kennedy was shot. If the lawn footage has been retimed, we may actually be seeing an earlier moment before she stepped forward. Another unsettling aspect to the bystanders is their unusually large size in relation to their distance from the limousine and its occupants, as if the entire background had been blown up. This again supports the theory that the background layer has been resized separately. As the car passes the last couple on the lawn, the man's legs go from a position of standing feet together to standing wide apart in one frame. That's an 1/18 of a second, which is a near physical impossibility, not to mention strange. It is, however, the logical point to cut from the retimed background back to real footage as the car speeds away. Here's an example of bystanders showing motion blur. Notice their shadows on the lawn are also blurry, as they naturally would be. However, just a few frames later, we see this. The bystanders are even more blurred, yet their shadows are impossibly sharp. This is a clear example of retouching, and further proof that the background has been altered. Although the lamppost passes in front of the limousine, it exhibits no movement in relation to the far background, as it should, being an object much closer in three-dimensional space to the panning camera. It also displays an odd, blurred extension on its lower left side, where it passes in front of the limousine, giving the lamppost an artificial cutout appearance. This further supports the theory that the limousine layer has been separated from the background lawn. Therefore, the lamppost would need to be cut out as well to overlay the limousine. Inconsistencies regarding the actions of the people in the limousine have been a point of discussion among researchers. For example, the driver turns his head twice to look behind and then forward faster than physically possible, which seems to indicate removed frames. The head turns correspond to two points at which the passengers lurch forward, as if the car has braked suddenly, although the car shows only gradual slowing compared to the background. The second of these brakes seems to be strong enough to throw Connolly and his wife completely to the floor of the car, and the driver and front passenger forward as well. These examples alone point to significant retiming of the limousine speed. The sprocket hole area on the left side of the frame reveals an interesting clue. When the motorcycle officer momentarily pulls up from behind the limousine at the same time as the second passenger lurch, this seems to indicate either the motorcycle suddenly sped up, or, more likely, the limousine suddenly braked, and the officer was not prepared for it and braked later, having the effect of pulling up alongside the limousine. Yet, the film does not seem to show the limousine slowing or stopping, again supporting the theory that the timing has been altered. This brings us to our final question. Why would someone do this? As mentioned before, the passengers in the limousine lunge forward at one point as if the car has braked suddenly. Many witnesses at the time testified that they saw the limousine slow or stop at the time Kennedy received the fatal headshot. Imagine the outcome of the Warren Commission investigation if they had seen a film in 1963 showing the Secret Service driver bringing the presidential limousine to a complete stop after shots had been fired to allow the assassin a clear, unmoving target for the fatal headshot. Who would they investigate then? A lone gunman? We began this presentation asking the question, does the Zapruder film today accurately represent the true events of November 22, 1963? Our answer is no. Let's review our findings. The pasted freeway sign, the large bystanders, the painted shadows, the cutout lamppost, the lurching passengers, the braking motorcycle. Once you have seen this evidence, it's difficult to watch the Zapruder film and see it as anything but a fabrication. Those who created it never wanted us to see even this much, but now it is too late. We know that the film was altered and retimed before the public saw it, most likely to hide the stopping of the limousine. Once this fact is accepted, an enormous house of cards begins to fall. If the Secret Service driving the limousine was involved, who else was involved? If the Secret Service, FBI, or CIA, who all had possession of the original Zapruder film, were involved in its alteration, what does that mean? If Time Life, which immediately bought the rights to the film and then refused to show it for decades, was involved, what does that mean? If the Warren Commission based their report on the timeline of a false Zapruder film, what does that mean?
Okay, you're listening to the Kras Files podcast with Adam and Garth. It's Thursday, the 18th of June, 2015. This podcast is available from iTunes and Podomatic. But you can also go to our new website, which is krasfiles.com, C-R-A-Z-Z. and everything is up and available there, including all our latest podcasts and a lot of older podcasts as well. So check out crazfiles.com. Thanks for listening to our podcast. Okay, Garth, we are ready to rumble.
Great.
It's Thursday, the 18th of June, 2015, and we're rejoined by our friend Don Fox. And Don was with us a few weeks ago, poring over the 9/11 work in regards to nukes on that day. And he's been kind enough to rejoin us again today to go over some JFK work of his, which is going to be fascinating. I've really been looking forward to this.
Yes, and, certainly will.
I know a lot of people will say, what does JFK have to do with 9/11? It has a lot to do with it. And when you start connecting the dots here, Garth, you do see this underlying dark shadow, don't you, that's
yes,
followed our lives, that it's been there behind the mirror of time for a very long time indeed, and it starts to get a little bit creepy and puts me a bit on the edge of my seat, but it's information that needs to be brought to light and talked about. So very interesting. Don, good to have you back.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, great, Don.
Great, Don. We're going to pour over some JFK stuff with you today. I was just telling you before we started, I played a clip at the start of this podcast about this film, the Zapruder film. That was taken on that day. Very interesting. So start where you would like to start, Don, for the hour, and lead us into this.
Sure. Okay. I think the best place to start is a question you just brought up. Well, why are two guys in Australia calling a guy in Minneapolis talking about the JFK assassination in 2015?
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's a great question. So why would you? Why this is, isn't this ancient history? Why are people still discussing this? Well, as you pointed out, the JFK assassination does have a lot to do with 9/11, and it really once you study JFK and, you know, events like 9/11, then you start to see how the world really works, who really runs the thing, and that's the people that were behind the JFK assassination were the same people that brought us 9/11, and they're going to bring us more atrocities until we stand up to them.
That's yes. Right. Yes, yeah.
The same pattern.
Because JFK, in one of his speeches, he warned, didn't he? He warned us, and he appealed to the media to try and support what they were doing, what he was doing, and or his government, and that was a warning that we should have taken notice of, particularly with that the criminal organizations that what he was mentioning were running the world.
Yeah, he talked about secret societies and a secret plan to enslave all the people on planet Earth, and that is definitely part of the agenda. So, okay, I guess let's maybe touch on that Zapruder film analysis clip you guys played. Now, I had come across that one, I believe, in 2008 or 2009, and I had heard stuff about the Zapruder film being altered, and I was like, wow, really? Did that? Because for years and years, ever since I saw the movie JFK, I always took the Zapruder film at face value. And then I saw that clip, and I'm like, wow. Because before, you would always watch the limo going by. And if that's all you ever looked at, it might seem somewhat plausible that's a real unaltered film. But then once you start paying attention to what's going on, you know, in the background there and with people in the crowd, then you're like, oh, wow, that's a bunch of phony baloney. One of the first things that those guys point out in that YouTube clip is that the Stemmons Freeway sign, that big enormous sign, got pasted in there. There was no Stemmons Freeway sign anywhere near that size in Dealey Plaza. And that's when it seems to be they went from real-time film to the altered version of the Zapruder film that we see today. And they also talk about how the people in the crowd, how those bystanders, how big they were, and their movements were out of sync with the limo. And that's a key point, because the limo's going by. Like, everybody in town showed up to see the president go through, but yet when you see people in the crowd, the limo's already passed them, and they're looking in the other direction.
Yes.
So,
that's obvious.
Yes. So why would you go down there to see the limo and then stare off into space, you know, and everybody's looking in the same direction? So, and then they had to paint in the shadows, and the lamppost got cut out. And then I think one of the key points they brought up was the lurching passengers. So, and this is a point Jim Fetzer hits on quite a bit, is that the limo stopped. And what the lurching passengers inside the limo is, that's when the driver, Greer, hit the brakes. He slammed on the brakes. All the people went forward. And then he started looking back. But because of the missing frames, his head is turning faster than is humanly possible, because they took some frames out. And all of that was to hide the limo stop. Oh, that's why they altered the Z film.
So that film, Don, it says the limousine passed exactly in front of this guy. His name was Abraham Zapruder. And so that was on November 22nd, 1963. He was a clothing manufacturer, and he had a new camera, evidently. And he filmed this 26.6-second home movie as it all happened right in front of him. So he had this incredible film, which they're saying is probably the most expensive 26 seconds of amateur film ever made. So this actual original film that he had on that day, these films that we've been showing after this, Don, that's what we're getting out to people, have been altered and changed. Do we know whatever happened to that original film? Did they ever keep it, do you think?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what happened to it. There has to be an unaltered version somewhere, because, and if people want to, the easy way to find this would be if you go to YouTube, and then if you just punch in Don Fox JFK 101, that'll bring up the YouTube video with me and Gary. And in there, it's about an hour long. There's a clip from the now deceased researcher Rich Della Rosa. And Rich had actually seen the unaltered Zapruder film. Apparently, it was making its way around some college campuses back in the 70s. And Rich had gotten a hold of it. And what Rich describes is it's pretty disturbing. I mean, obviously, what the extant film is, as Rich describes it, the film we all know, the Z film out there today, is pretty disturbing in and of itself. But the stuff that got cut out and altered or whatnot, that stuff is really, really, really bad. If you watch the Z film, okay, when it first starts, you see the limo coming down Main Street, then it makes the turn onto Houston, and then you can see it going down Houston a little ways, and then there's kind of it cuts out, and then the next time you see the limo again, it's going down Elm Street. You don't actually see it turn from Houston onto Elm. And Rich said that the driver, William Greer, he's trying to make that 110-degree turn from Houston onto Elm. And, you know, those guys were up drinking all night, and he almost missed the turn. There's a little annex-type street that goes right in front of the Texas School Book building. And it's not the real Elm Street. It's called, like, the Elm Street Annex or whatever. And Greer almost went down that and got completely off course. But what actually happened was somebody yelled at him, I think, or whatever, no, you got to stay on Elm Street, buddy. But the tires of the limo went up on the sidewalk. That's how slow the limo was going. When it was making that turn onto Elm, the tires of the limo, the wheels were up on the sidewalk. And then he had to get the limo off the sidewalk back into the middle of the street.
Hmm.
Was it still that slow, or did they speed up a little bit? It looks like it's going faster in the movie, you know, so that's obviously they've sped that up.
Because I think he maybe got back up to speed, you know, about halfway down Elm Street there. But that violates every Secret Service protocol for protecting the president that's in the book.
Yeah, it was just wasn't it?
Yeah, that whole scenario is a fail. Anybody involved in that would get an F for protecting the president. Yeah.
You can see it. Yeah. There's undamaged Zapruder films on YouTube, and they're saying the copy of this film was made before Life magazine damaged frames. So this is sort of what, and this guy's getting quite angry at anyone who thinks otherwise, you know?
I think I've seen that. That's still kind of the altered version of the
Says the undamaged Zapruder film, yeah.
Yeah, it's not the original film that people had seen back in the 70s, and copies of that have been pretty scarce now. Apparently in the 70s, they were out there quite a bit. But, you know, another thing Rich describes is Umbrella Man. He was standing there furiously pumping the umbrella. Mm. And that's highly suspicious. What is a guy? There was rain in the morning, but it had stopped. The sun had come out. And that's why the bubble top was removed. So why is a guy? Nobody else in the crowd has got an umbrella because the sun's out. So why is this guy standing there pumping the umbrella up and down?
Yeah, and there was also a guy that with a closed fist.
The Cuban Felipe Santiago, and I think that's who researchers have identified him as. Was Felipe Santiago, and he closed his fist, and that's when the limo stopped. Yeah. And now there's a couple of points there that I like to bring up. Okay, so we're all aware of, or you know, most people that research the JFK are well aware of that X. That's sitting out in the middle of Elm Street there, that Bob Groden taped, where it shows that frame 313 of the Zapruder film, that's where Kennedy was when his head exploded. But because the film was altered, that's not where the actual fatal headshot hit. X does not mark the spot. The limo was actually further down the road, and it was just about to the steps there. You know, the grassy knoll, there's some steps that come down all the way to the sidewalk. And then at the bottom of those steps is a sewer opening. And that's where I think the fatal headshot came from, was that sewer opening.
Hmm. Yes. Because they explained the angles, too. The angles coming from the fence behind the grassy knoll didn't agree with the angle of when it hit Kennedy's head.
Yeah, the fatal headshot appears to have hit JFK in the right temple, and it was a frangible or exploding bullet, and it blew a big hole out in the back of his head.
Fuck.
And apparently in the real Z film, what you see is brains and skull on the trunk of the limo. You know, you don't see that in the extant Zapruder film. What you do see is that big red halo, which apparently was altered as well.
Jeez, some of the bike riders, was it, Don, or some security had some of the skull on their clothes as well?
Well, Jackie Kennedy, the reason she was going back, she was scrambling back on the trunk of the limo. She was trying to pick up a piece of JFK's brain or his skull. And actually she did grab it, but that's when the Secret Service, you know, pushed her back into the car. She went back and got a chunk of JFK's skull, and she even brought it to Parkland and handed it to one of the doctors and asked them if they thought that would help.
So that bullet you're talking about, Don, that's what I was thinking about. How could a shot do that, like, to his head like that? But you're talking about a bullet that went in and exploded.
Yeah,
That's obviously evidence right there. They're saying Lee Harvey Oswald did it and took a shot, but not with exploding bullets, right?
Correct. Yeah, the so-called shells they found in the sniper in that so-called sniper's evidence. Nest. Yeah, were Full Metal Jacket. They weren't frangible bullets. The frangible bullets hollowed out so that it's not going to pass through a body. It's going to explode in the middle of it and do more damage. And that type of ammunition is outlawed, and it's a war crime to use that stuff.
Jeez, so it's like a bullet. It's like a normal bullet. They shoot and it lodges in the head and then explodes inside the head.
They drill out some of the material. I'm not an ammunition expert, but that's how I've described it. They have to get in there with a drill. They remove some of the material. So then the bullet doesn't have enough mass then to get all the way through your body, so it'll explode once it hits something.
How many seconds would that be before it's lodged in and then it explodes? Is there any evidence of him being sort of hit with the bullet and then the head exploding? You know what I mean? Because it would be the other way around, wouldn't it, if a bullet were to directly do that? It would be quicker.
Well, I guess the best thing I've seen on that is Tom Wilson from the Men Who Killed Kennedy. And he took a picture, the Mary Mormon photo. He took that and blew it up. Now, the Mary Mormon photo may have been altered as well, but the little area where the wound is in JFK's skull, he actually blew that up and he made a model.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Talk about that a bit, Don. That's amazing.
Mm.
Yeah, so he was able to determine where the two bullet fragments were. There's two bullet fragments. When the frangible bullet hit JFK in the head, it split into two main chunks. One went to the left, one to the right. And they were both coming up. It was coming at an upward angle was the angle of the shot. So it was coming up out of the ground or right out of that storm sewer. And some people will say, hey, I've stood in that storm sewer. There's no way that you could get a shot from there to hit the limo. Well, yeah, if somebody is standing on where that X is that Grodin puts out in the street from that storm sewer, no, you won't be able to hit them. But once you take into account that the Zapruder film has been altered and that the limo was actually farther down the street, the limo was almost right in front of that sewer when the fatal headshot occurred.
Jeez. Do you think, Don, this Zapruder character, I've got an interview with him, Abraham, in November 22nd, 1963. What do you think he thought about all this, being the one who filmed it? I mean, would he have known what actually would have happened, or he would have just not known and just filmed the thing had that film, you know?
Let's look at Mr. Zapruder for a minute. No,
he
I haven't done
Jewish,
it.
Jewish, wasn't he?
He was indeed
Russian
Jewish.
Russian Jewish,
so he was an Ashkenazi Jew, business owner in Dallas. So a lot of the questions are, who in their right mind would think that a president should drive a limo that takes a 110-degree turn and slows down below 11 miles an hour? Well, there was that whole parade route was actually altered by a guy named Sam Bloom, and he was on the Dallas Citizens Council that was kind of sponsoring the trip. Kennedy was making why did Kennedy go to Dallas in the first place? Let's start there. Mm. So he was raising money for the 64 campaign, and a lot of people told him, hey man, Dallas is dangerous, you shouldn't go there. But Dallas has a lot of money, and a lot of the money in the Dallas, like a lot of communities, was in the Jewish community. So he was really going there to suck up to rich Jewish Democratic donors. And The Sam Bloom was on the Citizens Council. He had enormous power there. There was three people on that Citizens Council. Two were Gentile, or Goy. Goyim, as we like to refer to ourselves. Mm. And there was Sam Bloom.
Goyim.
Yeah. The Goyim, yeah.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Goyim.
Me and my producer, that's what we call each other. Yeah, you're okay for a goyim, you know.
Yeah. You're not a bad goyim, Don.
Yeah. That's it. And so Sam Bloom went round and round with Kennedy's advance man. Hey, we want Kennedy to speak at the trademark, and then therefore you have to take this wacko turn. And Kennedy's advance man said, no, I think the women's building is a lot better place to go. It's more secure. It's a better route. But he could not win that battle with Sam Bloom. That's a name you don't hear a lot in JFK research, but yet he's one of the key pivotal players in this whole thing because he's the one that actually got that route that went right in front of the Texas School Book building.
Hmm.
Jeez.
Ooh, and is he goy? Is he a goy?
No, Sam Bloom is a Jew.
Another one.
He's Jewish, yes. So, and then there's also people like, there's a lot of evidence to point that a guy like Yitzhak Rabin was also in Dealey Plaza that day. He was the future prime minister of Israel. Soon after November 22nd, Rabin got promoted to head of the IDF, I believe it was. Jeez. And not long after that, he was, prime minister of Israel. Mm. And he was assassinated himself some years later, but, that's a different story.
Crikey. Who was the umbrella man, Don? Was that Errol Morris?
I've heard different theories on who he actually was. Yeah. I really couldn't say with any certainty who actually Umbrella Man was. The guy that came forward that said he was Umbrella Man was not.
So he was standing with his back anyway, wasn't he? With the umbrella, I guess. How would you know?
Yeah, and the umbrella that this guy brought in a few years ago, it didn't have the same number of spines in it that the Umbrella Man at Dealey Plaza had. So
creepy, though.
Why would they? Yeah, like all these years later, they trot out some guy to say that he was Umbrella Man.
Yeah,
and then and then he brings up a phony umbrella. What's going on with that?
Well, it's Hollywood.
Yeah,
that's what they do. I mean, the Jews own Hollywood, Don. So
yes, they do.
It's perfect. They can just put a little bit of icing on this cake and a little bit of icing on that cake and put it out and make it nice. It's a powerful form of mind control.
But the amazing thing is, they don't do it professionally enough. It's like that change in the as you mentioned, Don. Myself, I was looking at the vehicle and not looking at the background. But as soon as I saw what you sent to Adam and I looked at the background, it stuck out. It just was mind-blowing as soon as you start to see it.
That's what they betted on, Garth, I guess, just your eyes being drawn to that vehicle coming
to the vehicle.
To him getting killed, and you're not looking at that background, but there's always so much in the background to see.
Yeah, it's kind of like watching a hockey game, and all you ever do is follow the puck. You don't really see what's going on.
Yeah.
That, and for most of the people, that's good enough. But in 1963, I don't think they had any idea that we would have the image processing technology that we have today. And B, and like they said in that Zapruder film, that analysis clip that's up on YouTube there, they said they didn't even want us to see this much. I kind of doubt that they actually intended for the public to ever see the Zapruder film in the first place.
Mm.
Even though it was doctored, eventually it did make it out. Grodin in 1975 had it on Jerry Rivers, AKA Geraldo Rivera. Was that on Good Night America? I believe it was.
Mm.
It was the first time it was shown in public. And that whole brouhaha led to the formation of the House Select Committee on Assassinations, which was another whitewash job.
Yeah, it's sort of going back to this Zapruder guy, Don. Sort of what I'm gathering is that would you say we suspect that he was in on it as well?
I would say so. Yeah, I highly doubt
to do what the film, so all this would happen.
Yeah,
so they could put confusing films out there and stuff and keep the original.
And, I've heard some speculation that he didn't even film anything at all.
Mm.
That what was filmed was somebody else did it, because Zapruder himself had vertigo, and he had to have his secretary hold him up, because he would have a hard time. He was standing up on the pergola or whatever it was.
That's not going to be good for filming, is it?
No, so she had to kind of hold him there to stabilize him. And, you know, I don't know that the actual film that's called Zapruder was actually filmed by him. That may have been Army Intelligence, or who knows who filmed it.
God damn, it's a rabbit hole, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. You sit there, the first time you think of something like that, it's like, wow, really? But then as you kind of peel through this stuff, it's just lie upon lie upon lie.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's just lie upon lie, but they've committed these lies as like a ricochet of them that just goes down the line, doesn't it? It's amazing. They've covered sort of everything, and they sort of put things out there to stir up debate as well, and sort of doesn't matter what way the debate goes, they sort of have it covered. It's really amazing. The president of the United States gets murdered in front of the whole world, just like 9/11. It's the same thing, Don, because it's so brazen and in your face what they did on 9/11 with the towers, and also blowing the president's head off in broad daylight in front of the entire planet. You know, yeah, surface, you think, sheesh, you know, but then you sort of start digging into it, not 9/11, and it becomes the room of broken mirrors again.
Yes. Well, yeah, Kennedy was a public execution. That tells you
satanic.
Yes.
Oh, it's ritualistic.
And it also tells you that, okay, if the president of the United States actually ran the world, would that be allowed to happen? No, of course not.
Definitely not, no.
So that tells you that, well, whoever is the president is not. That's not where the buck stops. There's a power behind the scenes, just like 9/11, where hey, everybody thinks the United States is the lone superpower on the planet. Oh, really? If that were true, how does Wall Street get nuclear bombed, and how does the Pentagon get nuclear bombed on 9/11?
Exactly.
So there has to be a power structure above Wall Street, above the Pentagon, and above the president of the United States.
Yeah, a power structure that sees those areas, as you just mentioned, as disposable as well.
Yeah, well, yeah, or as the Donald Sutherland Man X character in the movie JFK liked to say, just scenery for the public.
And that movie, yeah. JFK, Don, was listening to some interesting facts on that. This Oliver Stone guy who made the film, what's your ideas on this? And evidently there was I can't remember his name, but there was a Jewish funder, a millionaire funder of that film as well.
Milchin.
Funded the movie.
Milchin. Yeah, Milchin funded it. Yeah, he's an Israeli arms dealer. And you'll notice the movie JFK, when it came out, it came out at the end of 91, and I saw it, I think, in early 92. I want to say February, either late January or early February 92. And because I used to watch C-SPAN a lot back then, and there was all this hubbub about the movie JFK on C-SPAN, even, believe it or not. And normally I just don't like going to movies, but there was so much controversy about this one. I'm like, okay, I got to go and see it. I had always thought Oswald killed him. And then, boy, I sat through that movie. Wow. I walked out of that theater and, you know, my heart was pounding. My mouth was dry. I was like, wow, what a movie that was. Holy cow. There's no way that guy could have shot him from the school book depository building. And, okay, so the thesis in the movie, they tell you as well, it was to start the Vietnam War. And, well, that's part of it. You know, that is part of it, no doubt. And Vietnam was a former French colony. But again, I think the real reason JFK was taken out was because he was seen as a direct threat to the survival of Israel.
Yes. Yes, that's so much in the book by Michael Collins Piper, isn't it? Final Verdict, where he takes us through. That was an incredible read. And he hardly left any stones unturned in that book. He sort of took them all on, Israel, the criminals, the whole box and dice were involved, it appears.
As you always said, Garth, yeah, you know, we get brought up, Don, watching the Goodfellas movies, thinking, you know, in America it was the Italians who were all the mafia, but it was actually the Jewish mafia.
Precisely, yeah, the Meyer Lansky. You know, I had heard the name of Meyer Lansky. Yeah, Meyer and Jake Lansky. Meyer was kind of the bigger figure there than his brother Jake. But I had heard those names, but really, as a citizen, they always hit you with, Carlos Marcello, Sam Giancana, guys like that, the Italian guys. Well, they were just turned out to be frontmen for Lansky. The Jewish Mafia, or the Kosher Nostra, was definitely superior to the Italian Mafia.
Yes. Yeah, so it was Hollywood that, through the movies, The Godfather and that, made it appear as though the Italians and the Sicilians were the big guys. But as you just said, they, and also as Michael Collins Piper wrote, they were the front guys only, weren't they? And also the Russian Mafia comes into this as well, because they've been enormously strong right up to today, it appears.
Yeah, yeah. Especially with the trafficking of the Eastern European women. To Israel.
the enormous access they have through the banking system and the black money. And once again, Piper mentioned a lot of this through some of the big banks that were started by people involved with Israel, and how these things were financed, and the black money through the drug system of these this mafia, or the Jewish Mafia. Which a lot of people sort of look at you strange when you mention things about the Jewish Mafia, but it's an actual fact. Can you say some more on that, Don? I'm very interested in that side of it, because I feel that they had a lot to do with the events that you're talking about now.
Yeah, the Jewish Mafia is in tight with the Jewish banking system. That's... they kind of work hand in glove. So you've got your banking institutions, you've got your mafia institution, then you've got your military and your covert operations like Mossad, CIA, and it all kind of works together. The banking system kind of gives the seed capital to the black ops. They run drugs, guns, or whatever, and then they get money back, and then they have to launder it through the financial system again, and then kind of wash, rinse, repeat. That's how it goes. And one of the key areas of research that, again, yeah, Michael Collins Piper's Final Judgment is a masterpiece. And we should say just maybe a minute, spend a minute or two here on Piper himself. He recently passed.
Yeah.
He died at 55. I think he was staying out in Idaho there with Mark Glenn. And I had talked to Michael Collins Piper a couple times. Well, I guess more via email. And the last I had heard from him, he wasn't doing too well. So,
health wise,
I know. Yeah, his ticker was bad. And I heard Mark Glenn. I was on his blog, I think, and Mark had mentioned that his heart functionality was down to about 25% there towards the end. And there was some speculation that maybe they had offed Piper, but he had been sick for an awful long time.
I remember the Venezuelan president, Hugo Chavez, came out and said that Castro warned him that the Americans or these people have cancer weapons and weapons, that affect your health. And Hugo Chavez tried to get treatment and couldn't for another aggressive cancer. And he stated a lot of South American presidents had the same type of cancers and illnesses that couldn't be treated. Said they had weapons that they could use on people. So interesting, Don, as well.
Piper's maladies were more kind of self-inflicted. I think he was diabetic. I think he was overweight and probably didn't exercise enough. And, sometimes you get into this research stuff so hot and heavy, it kind of consumes you, and your health starts taking a back seat, which is
not a positive
one
thing.
You can kind of get wrapped up doing shows and interviews and articles, and next thing you know, you put on 25 pounds and, and then you can get into trouble. So that's one thing I try to make sure I keep up on, my exercise, diet, stuff like that.
Just
so
make it fit into your life and keep doing your research, but you don't want it to sort of take over and become you.
Exactly. Yeah. See, I don't. So basically what I do, people, why is this guy in the air? Well, what I do is I read all these books and I take pieces to the puzzle and maybe I assemble them in a way that other people don't, I guess that's how I would.
Yeah,
I would
that's what I love listening to your work, Don. Yeah, you break everything down in such a great way to listen to as well. Yeah, yeah, it's really good.
But it's in a way too that's understandable. You know, I was thinking after seeing some of the stuff you sent, Adam, on the 9/11, Don. I was quite amazed that the two guys that were on the Jim Fetzer show with you, they were commenting, and I found it hard to understand what they were actually talking about because I'm only a layman, but I'm a practical person, and right from the start with 9/11 particularly, I smelt a rat. You know, it just didn't add up. And although it's taken many years to sort of put the you know, with guys like yourself who are offering all this great information, you can sort of put that information together. But the first information that my brain was telling me right from day one was that there was a big problem here. And as a layman, I couldn't quite understand why it was a problem, but it's like a splinter in your, like they said in The Matrix, wasn't it? A splinter in your
mind,
in your side sort of thing. It just keeps worrying you. Well, I think there's a lot of people out there that, you know, because of work that you're doing and others are putting all this together now, and it's not such a big conspiracy theory that it was first thought. It's actual fact, and when you look at it, just like the background of that Zapruder film, it becomes so obvious. You say, well, you know, hell, man, you know, why didn't I see that?
That's what I thought. I go, how many times have you watched the Zapruder film, idiot, and you didn't see that guy back there? Because there's like, I've seen one of those analysis where the guy in the background is like 9 feet tall, and you know, and some of these other people, they're like seven feet tall. If you were to compare them to the people in the limo, like, well, why didn't you notice that? You didn't look with what way they were looking. You didn't notice this. You didn't notice that. So I pick on myself like that, and then I try to put that same level of scrutiny on, you know, on other areas. So, yeah, like you were saying, okay, so stuff that's taken me, you know, 20, 25 years to figure out, I can regurgitate it in about 2 or 3 hours. And, you know, it sounds easy, but believe me, so if I get like an idea in my head, I'll just tell you how our process works. I'll send out an email to guys like Jim Fetzer and, you know, some other people in kind of our loose research group. And then these ideas get bounced around and scrutinized and then regurgitated. And it goes around the horn a few times and then it'll come back. And then, hey, once all those people have looked at it, then it starts, hey, this is probably getting pretty close here.
Yes.
Which is why the internet is so key. Like 10, 15 years ago, this sort of thing was really difficult because there was no way to get Word documents or PDFs around the horn that fast. You know, everything would have been snail mail and it would take forever. But now that we're at the speed of light, you know, we can almost keep up with these guys.
Yes. Yeah. That makes a big difference.
Yeah. Well, they've got whole productions now, Don, seems, with these Sandy Hook shootings and all these staged or what seem like staged shootings in America, you know. They've got all these production and it seems like crisis actors and fake blood. You wouldn't, you know, it's just unbelievable what they're doing now.
Like your dad said there, Adam, once you see that background, boy, it just sticks out like a sore thumb. And then you apply that same lesson to, like, say, the Boston bombing. And you're like, oh, that guy in the wheelchair, that's a load of BS.
They're just not relying on you doing that, though. They're just relying on most of the masses. They're not worried about us little percentage of people doing that. Most of the masses are just watching the TV and news for what it is, you know? They're not seeing it. So it's like they rely on that so much. Critical thought, I guess, breaking down things in the background, pictures, colors, everything, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, we're doing a lot of work recently now on the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. So we're working on that. And one of the passages in there says the occasional genius always has and always will slip through. So they're not overly concerned with a few conspiracy theorists. They don't have much trouble just discrediting a guy like me. I don't have much of a platform. The word gets out, but it takes time. you know, my blog gets maybe 100 hits, 150, 200 on a big day, you know. So, I mean, the word gets out amongst the hardcore people, but, you know, as far as ever hitting the mainstream, it's an uphill battle.
Oh, so the universities and schooling systems for Don, any kind of bright minds or intelligent people, they take them pretty quickly and they go through university and get churned out stupider than when they went in, really, and sort of thinking they know it all, but they've been changed, you know. Very intelligent people go through, and I'm not saying that, well, you know, they come out and they have some great ideas, but they get changed within the university systems, which is so incredible how that was set up as well. You know, they do take them, the brightest people, the bright sparks, you know, and but as you said, with the internet now, and just more people analyzing this, you're going to get, you know, incredible people starting to break all this down. And as you said with these films, when you start looking at it, and it really starts to stand out, absolutely. And you just think, the whole of history's been a lie, everything.
Yeah, that's...
you don't know where you are anymore when you start seeing it.
That's another thing it says, yeah, we shall rewrite history. That's one of their key points. They will rewrite history. For me, okay, so maybe let's get back into JFK quick while we still can here.
I'd like you to go back a little bit too, Don, just a little bit about the car stopping as well. President's car stopping. It stopped. So this is fascinating.
Fetzer's done a lot of work on that, and it appears, you know, with the testimony of the police escort there, the motorcycle guys, the limo may have stopped for up to 15, maybe even 30 seconds.
As long as that. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I've heard estimates of 5 to 15.
Is there any witnesses, Don, that came out about that, or anything we know about it stopping? Like,
Yeah, in fact, if people are interested in that, what you can do, go to YouTube and punch in the JFK Horseman. And my producer, Gary King, and Larry Rivera have done a ton of work on that. They've got Larry's dug up a bunch of interviews from those police escort officers, and that is some pretty riveting radio. The audio quality, well, it's from the 60s, so it's not the greatest audio quality, but the information there is pretty much jaw dropping. So that limo did come to a halt.
I see. Did you, back on that, JFK Horseman, is it?
Yeah.
Horseman?
Yep.
Oh, good. Yes.
Yeah, you should see Gary King and Larry Rivera. I think there's a couple of different JFK, if you put in JFK Horseman, yep. You'll see Gary King, and you'll see Media Broadcast Center. That's the stuff you want to watch, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing it's all still up on a lot of that, yeah. Jeez.
So if it stopped for that many seconds, gee whiz, that's a long time, isn't it? I know a lot of witnesses there disappeared. What I found out was that people had disappeared suddenly.
What are the guy in the front, Garth? Or Don, the guy in the front, did he turn around and shoot the president as well? There's stuff on
no.
That.
Okay, yeah. Let's talk about Greer for a second here, now that we're back on the beaten path here. Okay, so what people see when they watch the extant Zapruder film, or the altered version that we're all familiar with, is Greer's head is just whipping around at a very high rate of speed. So it looks like he's turning around and doing something. But if you watch his hands, they pretty much stay on the wheel the whole time. But what he was looking at was to see if Kennedy's head was actually shot. And once Kennedy was shot, then he knew he could get going again. But the reason Greer's head is moving so fast is because they removed frames from the film.
Yes, makes a lot of sense, yes. Because it couldn't be possible to move that fast.
No, he's moving about three or four times faster than a human being actually could. Like, his neck would snap if he was actually moving that fast.
A lot of people were saying that he had a gun, you know, and shot the president right in the head there.
But as we can tell, though, that the patrolman Bobby Hargis, one of the escort officers, was to the back and the left of Kennedy, and he heard the shot, and he got hit so hard he thought he had been shot himself with a piece of JFK's skull. So we know that the debris went back and to the left, and if Greer would have shot him, it would have, the debris, you know, the skull and the material would have went in a different direction. So
it's come from the down underneath,
yeah,
from the side. So we're looking at the drain area, where, right where the car,
yep,
stopped. Is that right, Don?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my best.
Should have been inside the drain pipe.
Yep, so that's why they stopped the limo, so that guy could get a clear shot.
Jeez, and then go underneath the drains and get out.
That's how he escaped, yep. So you've got all this confusion, you know, above ground, but the real assassin is running through the sewer and out to the Trinity River.
So did Oswald take a shot at all or anything? What happened there with him?
No, okay, and Gary and Larry Rivera and Fetzer and all those guys, they've done a lot of work on the Alchin 6 photo. And if you look at that, I mean, if you just Google Alchin 6, I'm sure you're going to see some of these articles that Fetzer has written. And you can see that Oswald was in the doorway. And I, in fact, I was going through some boxes last night even, and I found my old copy of, from 1995, my copy of Crossfire from Jim Mars. And in there, like I think on page 17 or 18, he talks about Oswald was standing in the doorway. And then the Warren Commission says, well, no, that's Billy Lovelady. But it looks like the Alchin's photo had been, again, manipulated to make it look like it was Billy Lovelady. But in all fact, it was actually Oswald standing there in the doorway.
Hmm.
Oy. It's, And they screwed up as well in New Zealand in the papers, Don. That was amazing to hear.
Oh, yeah, the Christchurch Star. Yeah, the Christchurch Star.
The
Christchurch, yeah, I've got
Star.
That Star. I've got that PDF here on my machine somewhere, and they had a full bio. It came out Saturday morning, which would have been, I think, around midnight Dallas time.
Yeah, New Zealand are ahead of us. So.
Yeah. So it would have been around midnight. Oswald had not even been charged yet, and yet here they had this whole bio and yeah, the whole thing in the Christchurch Star down in New Zealand,
wearing a suit.
And yeah, nice picture. Yep.
So it was, you know, pre-done, and had his photo.
Oh yeah, it was all in the can. Yep. Yeah.
Oh, and it was released to the papers early.
Yeah, they had their cover story all ready to go, and
they do that now. That, yeah.
Yeah, it's very, I've likened that. That's very similar to on 9/11 where you have Jane Stanley talking about Building 7 collapsing.
Yes.
25 minutes before it actually went down.
Yeah, it's in the background.
Yeah, it's still sitting there, and she's talking about the Solomon Brothers building has collapsed. And you know, it's right there over her shoulder.
Crikey's.
It doesn't get any more ridiculous, does it?
No,
and yet they get away with it.
So, like, are you a remote viewer, Jane? Do you have ESP, or what is going on here, Jane?
Yeah.
Oh my
goodness.
Yeah,
dear me. But they're doing this all the time, aren't they? I mean, it's with everything they do. It's none of it's done really professionally. I mean, it is done professionally because it takes so much organization. But the final result isn't sometimes all that professional, is it?
Oh, it's left up to the news, Garth. It's that they can do it, they can commit something, Garth, and then you know, the news channels will tie it all up and edit it and make it look nice, and that's what goes out to most of the world. You know, so they're not so worried about that actual event on the ground, I don't think. But I guess everyone has carrying iPhones and, you know, as well now. So that presents a big problem, but I think they're just, they rely just so much on the nightly news because that's what people swallow. You know?
They do.
That's all they do, isn't it? Then sent out to the newspapers and the media. So it's all edited before it gets anywhere, really. It was that Western Australia guy that wrote on the Port Arthur. What was his name?
Joe Viles.
Yeah, Viles. Yeah, he claimed that he could intercept the news before it actually was edited. So that
or
was
satellite stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the news is only maybe, what is it, 10 minutes now, and the rest is weather and sports, and you know, they always clip the end off, Don, with a little fluffy animal story, and that's
and
it. Like, and they have all these news shows now where they seem to have these comedians up there on the panel with them, and they bring up some serious stuff, but then they have the comedian to make fun of it, so it disengages the audience, you know, getting all that as well.
Well, like it says in the protocols, only lies printed.
Exactly.
That's it. We will control everything that reaches the public, and only lies will be printed. So there you go.
Yeah, it's so we.
So the work you're doing on the protocols. What's the eventual aim of that, Don?
We are going to do a show on that. We're going to do a 2-hour show.
Wow.
Breaking that down. Yeah,
that'll be good.
So there. Yeah, we're all waiting for David Duke's book to come out, The Illustrated Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion.
Yeah.
But he's working on his masterpiece. I'm like, well, there's no reason we can't slap together a PowerPoint and play some audio clips and do a show on it. So that will be coming out in the next few weeks here. I guess before we wrap it up, I'd like to bring up Lyndon Johnson for a minute.
Go through that, Don, before we wrap it up.
Yes.
Today. We'll just go through that until we finish.
Sure. Okay, so he's the guy that took over. He was the vice president. And one aspect that a lot of people haven't touched on is the fact that Lyndon Johnson was Jewish. If your mom is Jewish, that means you're a Jew. So both of his great-grandparents on the maternal side were Jewish. So there's a pretty much near certainty he was a Jew. And not to mention the fact his aunt was an ardent Zionist, and she was heavily involved in the Dallas Zionist community. And in fact, Johnson was so pro-Zionist back in the 30s, he was running guns from Texas to Palestine, you know, before it was even Israel. He was running guns to freedom fighters in Palestine. And so was another infamous figure from the JFK assassination, one Jack Rubenstein.
Yes.
And everybody thought of him as being a mafia guy, but turns out, okay, if you're running guns from Texas or Chicago to Palestine, that you're intelligence, you're Mossad. He was a Mossad operative. So Jack Rubenstein, he was a Jew. He was an Ashkenazi Jew. He later did change his name to Ruby, but he was born Jacob Rubenstein. He was a hardcore Zionist. And another thing about Johnson, his role in the USS Liberty.
Yes.
So he had basically ordered the attack on the defenseless American spy ship that was over there during the Six-Day War. And some of the military had gotten wind that the ship was under attack, and they were going to send planes to help. And Johnson got on the phone and said, "Recall the wings." And they're like, "What?" And he's like, "Recall the wings. I want that goddamn ship going to the bottom. We're not going to embarrass my friends," you know, i.e. Israel. So the whole point of trying to sink the Liberty was they were going to blame it on Egypt, and then they were going to nuke Cairo. That was the plan. And see, JFK had been, while he was alive, he was putting the screws to David Ben-Gurion over Israel's illicit nuclear weapons program out at Dimona. And Mordecai Vanunu talked about that there was near certain indications Israel was behind the JFK assassination. And Johnson, ardent Zionist, power mad, greedy, he fits right into all this. So did LBJ order the assassination on his own? No, he was working at the behest of international Jewry.
There's that family, Don, as well, the Bronfman, was it, or?
The Bronfmans. Yeah, they were heavily involved
Very powerful.
Yeah, Montreal, the Permindex connection.
Permindex, yeah, that's the one.
Yep. Yep. And, well, what is Permindex real quick? Let's just talk about that real quick here. Permindex was a Mossad, the Israeli intelligence, arms trading and money laundering venture operating in conjunction with the Meyer-Lansky organized crime syndicate. And that's where Clay Shaw came in. He was a longtime CIA asset, and he served on the Permindex board. So that's how Garrison had gotten wind of that. Clay Shaw was actually a pretty good-sized player, not just a regular CIA operative. He was in Army Intelligence, and it looks like he was working with Mossad, too. So that's why Jim Garrison's investigation had to be scuttled, because the trail was going, it wasn't just going from Dallas to New Orleans, it was going all the way back to Tel Aviv.
Yes. And
that's when the system that's when the system gets a little uppity. They're not big fans of you talking about stuff like that. So that's why Garrison faced all the the shitstorm that he did. The Jewish-owned media was just all over him. They were bugging his office. They were infiltrating his staffers. They were just all over Jim Garrison. Completely demonized. And the only man to ever bring a prosecution in the death of the President of the United States.
Jeez.
Yeah. Even under all that pressure, he still managed that.
Yeah, I'm not surprised he didn't get a conviction, but to even get the thing into court took a Herculean effort. I think a lot of them underestimate what Jim Garrison actually did in the face of what he was going up against. He was going up against the whole Jewish establishment, media, military, intelligence, banking. All of it.
It was like a secret war going on there, Don, with JFK as well, with Israel. All sorts of... if you look at the United States now and the Israel lobbies running your government and AIPAC and all this, maybe that's something he foresaw and was trying to stop, but look at it now. It's out of control. They completely control America.
Yeah. Yep. Completely, 100%. Yeah. Kennedy was going to... And there's debate amongst the... amongst researchers, well, was he really going to end the Federal Reserve? Well, yeah, he was having the Treasury issue its own money that wasn't the Federal Reserve note is a bank note, an interest-bearing bank note. So you've got to create debt in order to create dollars. So Kennedy was going to create debt-free silver-backed certificates instead. So... Kennedy was seen, as I've mentioned before, he was seen as a direct threat to the survival of Israel, and not just Israel, but international Jewry as a whole.
Yes, they certainly had. They were the only ones really that had the reasons. Because he was going to smash the CIA into 1,000 pieces, just on what we've spoken tonight and what you're saying, Don. Is how complicit the Mossad and CIA were. So, he certainly stepped into the lines down there, Kennedy, or the Jewish line stem. Rather frightening. He must have known he was doing it. He must have known he was a risk.
Yeah, he knew what he was doing. And he's like, there's a plot to enslave every man and woman in this country. And I intend to fully expose that plot. Well, had he lived, he would have. But he didn't live. And you look at the series of presidents we've had since Kennedy, and it's pretty embarrassing. They're all basically Zionist lackeys. Everyone. When you start looking at every one of these guys, and it's especially bad with the Republicans when you've. Although Nixon, they did not like Nixon, but let's face it, Nixon would never have gotten elected had JFK lived, because Bobby would have gotten elected to succeed him. So you would never would have had Nixon. The Jews actually didn't like Nixon a whole ton. The more I've done a bit of research on that, and instead of killing Nixon, they just did the Watergate thing to assassinate his character. So Nixon got relatively lucky. They just dispersed his name. They didn't blow his brains out in the middle of the street.
Yeah.
But, you know, Ronald Reagan, complete Zionist shill. George Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush.
Yeah, his son in there, Don.
Yep, yeah.
Running for presidency. That's not a good sign.
Jeb Bush is not going to be the president of the United States.
That guy's a joke. Shouldn't he go back to hosting the Miss World, Miss Universe pageant or something?
You know? Yeah, I don't think he can screw that up too bad. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
The guy's a celebrity, you know, if that.
Well, his brother George had, I mean, W was probably the least qualified man to ever hold that office. And that's really saying something, and, you know, compared to, you know, some of the horrible presidents we've had. George W. Bush is probably the worst.
Oh, is that right?
There's more of him coming.
They said he had an IQ just about a point over retarded.
Yeah, it was right around room temperature, I think.
Yeah, lukewarm. like a fish with big eyes, you know, swimming in the fish tank.
What about Clinton, Don?
Bill Clinton was actually a smart guy, and he even talked about the fact that there was a government within the government, and he didn't control it.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, Clinton did bring us the end of Glass-Steagall, which is what the Wall Street Jewish bankers wanted, and he did bring us NAFTA. But, you know, compare him to the Republicans, and really, if you look at the numbers with Obama now, the unemployment, yeah, it's bad, but it's not as bad as it was under W. It's recovered somewhat. There is some economic activity going on now, whereas in 2007 and 2008, it was just, we were in the midst of a depression here in this country.
Yeah. Frightening, isn't it?
Jeez.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. They're saying that the U.S. dollar is strengthening a little bit.
Well, that's relative. I think it's because everything else is collapsing faster, I think, is what they mean by that.
Yeah, around it.
Because the euro, it doesn't look too good at the moment.
No, but the thing of it is, once the euro goes, the dollar won't be very far behind it. So
it's shredding paper, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same Jewish bankers that created the euro, create the dollar. You know, it's the same basic European Jewish families, so.
Jeez. So,
yeah, it's frightening, isn't it?
John at JFK, Don, was murdered by the CIA in collaboration with the Mossad.
That's exactly it, my brother.
You know, and even if you look at the CIA, they're, yeah, most heavily infiltrated by Israel themselves. Scary
stuff.
Yeah,
well, the CIA works for Jewish Wall Street banks.
Exactly, yeah. If it was that bad when President Kennedy was shot, imagine how bad it is now.
It's even worse, because they were at least making... There was at least somewhat of an effort to clean some of this stuff up with reining in the CIA and Bobby Kennedy going after organized crime. When is the last time you saw any attorney general in this country go after organized crime?
Yeah. I think it was in a movie.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
They do in the movies, Don. Fair go, come on. They do it in the movies, that's good enough.
there isn't even lip service given to it anymore. It's just, oh, you got to lay off Wall Street. Get on Wall Street. Yeah. Oh, really? The guys that are scamming us out of all of our pension funds and our mortgages and our student loans. Those guys, yeah, them.
Well, something's got to happen sooner or later, you know, really. I mean, Iceland, evidently, they're putting these bankers in jail, which has improved their economy dramatically.
A little bit, yeah. There's been some repercussions to that, too, that I've been hearing about. I have to look into that a little bit more. But at least Iceland figured out who the problem was and got after him.
Yes.
See, in this country, the Jewish-owned media doesn't go after Jewish-owned banks.
No.
So the average person sitting at home clicking the remote doesn't get that upset with Wall Street. They're like, oh, those guys are just doing what they do. Well, what they're doing is they're getting rich off reducing your lifestyle down to a pop. Since 1967, the U.S. standard of living has declined by 2/3for the average citizen.
I was just reading, Don, in New York, they're running out of money for the food stamps and stuff. There's so many people in New York trying to get the food handouts. They're running out of cash there as well.
Yeah, all the jobs have been outsourced with all free trade agreements, and it's the race to the bottom.
You've got the TPP coming in now, which is basically the death knell, you know?
Well, the TPP has been held up.
It's good news.
It was rejected, so yeah, but you know those guys are coming back. I'm hearing now they're going to march forward on some other aspects of the agenda as though the TPP did pass, and they're going to try to get it to pass at a later date.
Yeah, yeah. Our Prime Minister's shaking to sign that, believe me. But if it stops, if they can stop it in America, it will have a downward effect everywhere, you know. So we need it to be stopped there in your country, Don.
There are a few people that have figured out now that the free trade agreements are bad for your standard of living. As they've had to move back in with their parents or they have to get help from friends or couch surf, it's starting to sink in on a certain level. I don't think you're going to see a real revolution in this country until people can't afford to put gas in the tank and go to the store to buy food.
So they're backed up into the corner of a wall. Yeah.
Yep, and then it's going to be too late to really do anything about it. But
cancer set in too deep.
Yep. So what we can do is we can just say, hey, here's the guys that are doing it. Here's what their game plan is.
That's the best thing to do, Don.
We'll
just sit on the roof when it all comes down and ends with a bottle of whiskey, and about all we could do, you know. But at least we gave it a shot.
Yeah. Well, the alternative was you can sit in the basement and bitch about the government, which is what I did for years and years and years. Or you can at least try to make an effort to write some articles, do a radio show here and there.
Yeah, it's what we're doing now.
Yes.
Yeah, it's all good. Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's amazing how many people don't know about the kosher tax on food. And we're talking about a recession in America. And, you know, and you were saying just then, Don, how they're feeding off us. And here's another one where people have got no idea that it's, so much of their processed food, they're paying the Jews a tax. It's quite amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's everything. That's what the carbon tax is. That's a tax to Jewish bankers to breathe. They're going to use that to fund their Jewish world government.
Yeah, and they're getting away with it. And it fascinates me that they can get away with it. And people are saying the prices of things are going up, and et cetera, et cetera. And we understand inflation because of the debt economy, but these things like this extra tax – on billions of items, trillions of items probably. So these people, they just keep doing this. They just keep getting away with it.
Well, they get us to fund our own enslavement. That's what it boils down to.
And also, Don, they get us to deny that it's happening. We deny that they're doing it to us. You know what I mean? So we protect the enemy, and that's an incredible thing.
Or we like it being done to us.
Well, we enjoy it as well after a while, but for this parasite to sort of invade our lives in the way that it has, and then we deny that it even is doing it. You know, it's amazing.
Well, they pay a few shills a lot of money to further the agenda, and so they don't have Jews up on TV selling this, because that would be too obvious. So they have to pay some of the gullible goyim, hey, sell out your fellow man. Sell out your countrymen. Here's a nice fat paycheck. Here's a yacht. Now, here's your marching orders.
Yeah, and as society crumbles, they're going to take that money, aren't they? More and more of them are going to go on that side, you know, to get that good life and that check coming in, you know. So there's a conga line of stooges, Don, lined up, waiting and willing to work for the New World Order system. They love it.
They do. I don't. So I'm going to stand in a opposition to that agenda.
Good man.
And you know, and I'm getting paid a big fat nothing by you guys. And hey, that's fine. I'm running a small business. I can get a job if I absolutely have to. I'll squeak by one way or the other. I don't need a yacht. I don't need a vacation home. You know, give me a couple of conspiracy theory books and an internet connection, and yeah. I'm good to go.
Yeah, we're here for you, Don. We're here on the other side.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to your protocols.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Hey, after I do the show with Jim and I get all the material together, if you want, I can come down and we can break down the protocols.
We'll do
that'd be great. I'll get back into them myself. And yes, that'll be great. Anything you can send Adam, he'll pass on to me, Don.
Okay, Garth.
Yeah, we've got a new website up and running now, Don, so I put your stuff up there as well. And we'll just keep growing that and keep sharing the information. But before we wrap it up, you want to get out your website information and also your great show that you do each week.
Sure, yeah. I've got a weekly show on VeteransTruthNetwork.com.
Times as well.
Yep. It's supposed to premiere Sunday, 4 p.m. Central Time or 5 p.m. Eastern here in the U.S., but I think most people probably listen to the podcast. There'll be an MP3 the last two shows will be up in the folder there. If you go to the archive section, you'll see the last 2 weeks worth of shows. You can download those for free. If you pay $3 a month, you can get access to the full archives.
Yeah, that's a good price. Yeah.
Yeah, $3 a month, and you know, you don't just get my show. You get Stu Webb and Chip Tatum and Rima Labo and all the other hosts on the network. You can read all my stuff for free. It's at donaldfox.wordpress.com. I've got some JFK stuff up there, a lot of 9/11. It is a personal blog, so you'll see some other stuff up there too. Eventually you're going to see more health and fitness type stuff. But in the immediate future, look forward to more JFK and 9/11 stuff.
That's great.
Yeah, really opening out.
All right, that's great, Don. Thanks very much for your time. Really gracious of you to join us today for this great conversation, and we hope to get you back on again soon for another
you
talk.
Bet.
Keep moving.
Yeah, I love being on with you guys, and you're doing a great job. Keep it up, and I'd be happy to come back in a few weeks or whatever.
That's great, Don. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We'll do that again. There's always so much to go through with you. So much.
Sure. Sure, you bet.
Okay. Thanks, John.
Terrific.
Have a good one, guys.
See you again
soon.
All right,
Don. Bye.
Yep, bye.
Okay, thanks for listening, Nat, and thanks to Don Fox for joining us today. And we will be back again next week. Take care.